broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, Happy Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Let's start the week by going up front to get the latest on Wisconsin politics statewide with Channel 12 political director Matt Smith on Point Taken.
Welcome to the Monday show. Yes, that means Matt Smith is here as he is most Mondays. A late happy Father's Day to you. I know you're the father of three outstanding young women. And
girl dad.
Yeah.
Good old dad. And you were very busy.
Spent it on the softball field, yeah. Right? Like, that's what we do these days.
It is a very common refrain I hear from young dads now. So we are certainly scheduling. As much as I complain to people, yeah, say they're too busy all the time, I know young dads and moms are very busy. All right, let's get to it.
The weather was beautiful. So, yeah.
So, you know, obviously the story that you and I talked about last week is the upcoming election. But, you know, in many ways, we're still looking back, Matt Smith. And you had a couple guests that sort of reflected on that, Mayor Cavalier Johnson and Don Millis, Wisconsin's election commissioner. Where do you want to start? Mayor Johnson's comments, I guess we'll start with that.
Yeah, so we haven't really dived into this too much on upfront, but right, there's like this drip, drip, drip of the FBI questioning or looking to question people here in Milwaukee about the 2020 election. We know what's happening. We know some interviews have been done. We know some interviews have been attempted and not done. So I think the big question is, A, why now, right? And B, what is the end goal for the FBI, for the Trump administration? There's clearly a lot of speculation about that. Clearly, the president has talked about 2020 a lot. They've gone into other states that he lost in 2020. So, like, what's happening? And the larger issue just beyond that is that Milwaukee's absentee ballots are not yet destroyed. Like, that is incredibly unusual. Every other year, like, I think it's 9 months, and then they get destroyed by state law. But because of ongoing litigation and this and that and this, the ballots are still here, and there's concerns about that.
Yeah, so, go ahead.
I was going to say, because Milwaukee executive David Crowley was here.
Yeah.
Like, a week and a half ago, and we were talking about this exact thing. And so, basically, the issue is there's one singular unsolved or unresolved lawsuit of someone who doesn't even live in Milwaukee County. And he made it sound like the reason why this is ongoing is because that person, the plaintiff, continues to like change lawyers and there's all these different issues. So is the connection to the FBI continuing to be able to ask questions connected to this litigation, or is it two separate things?
It's two separate things, but the concern over the ballots has intensified since the FBI has now come in. So the question is, would the FBI attempt to seize these ballots or take the ballots as part of whatever the agency is doing? And then the concern from some is, if you have these ballots and if you get the voter list, there are numbers that correlate. So in theory, you could match up and determine who voted for who in 2020.
That's an important thing, because we've talked briefly about that. It's typically your vote is unknown to other people. It's an anonymous vote, right?
Yeah.
In this case, because of specific, well, what is the technology that allows maybe that potential match to see? And envelope that comes in, the ballot itself.
So to verify and check through the absentee process, right, you match the voter list with a number that is put on the absentee ballot itself. So if you had those two sets of data and were able to match them, which Don Millis and I know we'll talk about in a second, the Republican chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission is incredibly concerned about this as well. There would have to be a lot of steps that would need to happen. But the fact that the ballot exists make that a possibility.
All right, let's hear briefly here from Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson.
We know several MPD officers sat for interviews with agents. Has anyone else inside City Hall, a current or former employee, actually talked with the FBI?
My understanding is no.
Are they refusing to?
I don't know the answer to that, but my understanding is no, they haven't. Perhaps it's a question for the city attorney. I know that there's been outside counsel that has been engaged on this as well. But my understanding as of this moment is no.
Would you encourage them to talk if there is nothing to hide?
Look, there is nothing. There's nothing that's going on. Right? This is a vanity project. I don't want to give any additional light to, you know, these efforts to relitigate an election that was decided.
The president has alluded to, in not just Wisconsin or Milwaukee, but all across the country, the truth will come out, essentially. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
Is this part, this investigation, is it part of that greater story or narrative?
I mean, that's the question, right? The FBI has not commented publicly. And we have seen what the president has said, and we have seen what has happened in other states. So how wide this is or what the outcome is or the end goal still remains unknown to, I think, a lot of people in the city and even the state, whether it be the governor's office or the Elections Commission.
So then there's Don Millis, yeah. who is a part of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. He is the new chair. Is he yes. chair? Is he currently yes, chair? He's yes. not like about to be chair.
Yes, I think just as of like type, because by law they switch back and forth from Democrat to Republican. Yes. And Jacobs was the previous chair. Now they voted Don. So yes, I think very recently, new chair.
Despite being a Republican, he's been very critical of both David Crowley. I'm assuming Mayor Johnson, also Josh Call, as far as they are not doing enough to get yes. these ballots destroyed, which is a little interesting to me because if he's a Republican, I would think that the talking points or the marching orders would be more about helping the FBI. So what is his point as far as saying that they're not doing enough to make sure that these ballots are actually destroyed?
So he on the show, he once again, and he did this with the paper, but a little more forcefully with us, essentially is calling on the attorney general to get involved to force the courts to say, yes, Milwaukee County, destroy these ballots.
And opinion. And I'm paid to have an opinion. Yeah. That is the right call for a conservative or liberal, Democrat, Republican. Those ballots should be destroyed.
Could Josh Call get involved? Like, is there a room for him, opportunity for him to make a move here?
Don Millis believes so, from the Election Commission.
Let's hear a little bit from the chair of the Wisconsin Election Commission, Don Millis.
In terms of your conversation with George, is there a path to destroying them? Have you been reassured of that?
I think that... From what I can tell, I think they're doing is the most they can. I think that it may be advisable for the attorney general to intervene. There certainly is a statewide interest in keeping these ballots, these voters' preferences secret. And so I think that may help speed it up. But I think that he's been frustrated with the slow pace of the litigation.
In terms of a timeline on that, I mean, do you have a best case scenario as we sit there today on when this could happen?
Best case scenario would be tomorrow, but I just don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to probably be weeks or months before that happens.
I think he's answering the questions the way they need to be answered, regardless of your political affiliation or ideology. That's the right answer, and I think he's directly on point. And by the way, that's great to see from someone who's chairing our elections
committee. Yeah, and he's also making the legal argument that, yes, this case is open. Don is an attorney himself. So he says, according to him, there is a very strong legal argument that whether this case is open or not, the fact that these ballots exist in terms of discovery or evidence, no one should have access to them, so they should be destroyed, is his perspective, and he wants the attorney general to make that.
All right, we're late for break, but that's because Matt Smith had a lot to say in that first segment. Host of Upfront, Chris and Steve on a Monday edition. Join us on the text line, as always, 855-616-1620. More with Matt talking Packers and broadcasting rights and all the things that are swirling around the NFL, and that's a big deal for the NFL's smallest franchise. We'll get to that after this on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen here with Steve, and it is Monday morning. So Matt Smith, political director over at Channel 12, is with us. And this was not an Upfront this week. I know, I think previously you had Representative Scott Fitzgerald on.
Last week, yeah.
Who... you and I, Steve, have not talked about this yet, but has he mentioned, like, why? So we know that forever Senator Tammy Baldwin has been talking about trying to get everyone in Wisconsin the ability to watch the Packers no matter what media market they're in. That is something different than what Representative Fitzgerald is trying to do. He is looking at the ways now the NFL shares money and all the different ways that they have licensing, because it's not just broadcast anymore. Yeah. There's streaming, there's YouTube, there's all these different things. So explain again what Fitzgerald thinks should happen, and then we can talk about why the Packers it does not benefit or behoove Packers or Packers fans.
So quickly, this goes back to 1961. It's called the Sports Broadcasting Act, and it allows the league to collectively negotiate the broadcasting licenses for all the games. Obviously, back in the 60s, right, you had the three networks. The league is now pushing to streaming. You have the Netflix games. You have Amazon Prime on Thursday night. So there's all these different platforms that some lawmakers, like Congressman Fitzgerald, are concerned and are questioning whether that violates the Broadcasting Act of 61. Well, what happens with that is all the revenue collected from that, those negotiations, the ad revenue, It's distributed equally among all the teams. Right now, I think it's at about $460 million a year. So the Packers get as much as the Cowboys, as much as the Bears, as much as the Giants. And the concern is if all of this goes away and teams are left to negotiate on themselves, the Packers are going to be way behind since they're a small market team. Like, let's say, trying to compete against the Cowboys or the Giants.
Or even
for
the Bears.
I mean, maybe if they move to Indiana, that's a different story. So they're left, right, with nothing in terms of negotiating power. So this really helps Green Bay. And the Packers essentially have said, this is going to wipe out the team if this goes away. And Scott Fitzgerald has kind of said, well, I don't really care. I think we need to make some tweaks to this.
Which is a shocking position to have as a Wisconsin representative.
Yeah, and he does have to run for office at some point.
Yeah. I know he's in a pretty safe seat for now, so until lines were redrawn, but it's like, it's a wild position to have in a state that loves its Packers.
So when he came on the show, he said, listen, I don't think we don't need to fully dismantle the Broadcasting Act. I think we need to make some tweaks. But what those tweaks are, no one has really talked about in the House Judiciary Committee. There's been no legislation proposed. So there's a lot of major concerns. And after that interview, the Packers came back with a really fiery statement after he appeared on Upfront.
Yeah, they used words like deeply concerned, give zero consideration. They weren't having anything that he was trying to sell. It's a 65-year-old Sports Broadcasting Act. And I would remind Congressman Fitzgerald, everything in broadcasting or communication has evolved. And streaming has evolved. That story. It's not three networks anymore.
Well, I do think there is a opportunity to look at how much the consumer is asked to pay across all these different streaming platforms, and how much in order to see your team play, how many things do you have to be subscribed to? And there's room for that conversation, but I don't. In getting rid of the way that helps the Packers earn as much money as other larger markets, I'm not sure that's the solution.
Yeah, and whether that's going to happen or not, I think it's this gray area we're in that has so many people concerned that we really don't know what Congress is going to do or if they're going to do anything at all, but they've started to hold these hearings.
And going back to the Tammy Baldwin piece, a separate thing, if you would allow that piece of the change so that Western Wisconsin wouldn't be just given to the Vikings audience, that would change the story because every city in Wisconsin would then be able to get for free every Packers broadcast. Simple. But instead, he wants to do this and blow up potentially, as you said, the whole franchise because you're pissed about this. That's just dumb.
It is dumb.
It's another example.
Here, it's dumb.
Yeah, it's another example of some people trying to live in the past. And I as much as I live in the past on occasion and I'm old, I'm not a fan of this. Streaming is the new reality. Embrace it, figure it out, make it fair.
Yeah.
But don't blow up your franchise because you're mad about something.
And to your point, Kristen, right? Maybe there are tweaks and changes, as Fitzgerald has said, that won't blow up the entire system, but incorporate the streaming and ensure that the antitrust laws are being followed. And,
I was going to say, is the motivation here something tied to the DOJ's investigation of the NFL? I know you can't really answer that, but that's happening simultaneously, right?
Yes. And that is why they had asked Roger Goodell to come testify before this committee. And that's one of the reasons the NFL said no, because we have this ongoing investigation and litigation. Yes, there's concerns over Sunday Ticket and all of this stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on as we sit here.
Matt Smith, political director at Channel 12, host of Upfront, along with Jaron Jordan. We'll wrap it up with Matt after this. 620 WTMJ is where you're at. Winding down our time with Matt Smith, I should say. He is on Channel 12, political director, and also the host of Upfront on Channel 12. Great political show. We often bring many of his clips from that program to our show, Point Taken with Kristen and Steve. And I guess for the remaining 2 minutes, some of the things you're going to be talking about this week, looking to cover as a journalist in the city of Milwaukee.
Well, I mean, we're inching closer to the primary.
Yeah.
We still have 7 Democrats in the field coming off the state convention. So, we've seen a couple go up on TV. Are we going to see more? Mandela Barnes told us last week he will be up on TV before the primary starts. So what's going to happen? Is anything going to happen before the primary? We have our debate that we'll be preparing for 2 weeks before.
July 28th?
July 28th. Exactly 2 weeks before the primary.
Is that the only debate they're doing?
So basically the day that absentee ballots, like, isn't that when basically the early voting starts? Yeah.
Yes.
Is that the only debates?
I mean, they're doing a whole bunch of forums stuff, which are, you know, a little more lower profile.
I was going to say, so explain, when it comes to the rules, what is the difference between a debate and a forum? Because it's harder to put a debate on, because I know it's a lot easier as far as any given organization, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, we're going to do one on data centers, I think, the day after the debate. But explain to listeners what the criteria is to label it a debate and why it's harder.
Yeah, it is hard. I mean, a forum is a little more open-ended, I guess, right? Like, it's a little less restrictive. We clearly are in the parameters of our broadcast time, right? And our streaming time, and we have to get all the candidates to agree. And it's, some of the debates are typically a little more high profile than the forums hosted in whatever county or whatever, right? Cause they're doing a ton of these forums that just don't receive a lot of attention because they're smaller. They're meant for smaller groups or they're a little more focused. This is wide open. This is anything on the table. This is going to air statewide.
Since you've taken over as political director, will this be the most crowded primary debate you've moderated?
Yeah, because I forget what 18 was, but yes, I came just in 19, just after that primary. I was in Indiana for a while.
I mean, from the voter's perspective, it'd be great to have less candidates because you can hear from them more.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, we're prepared for 7 candidates on stage. Wow. We'll see if we'll have fundraising reports. We'll have a Marquette poll. So we'll see if anything changes, but could have 7.
July 28th, 7
will
Channel
be on the ballot,
12.
At least.
Yeah. Plenty of time before now and then.
Somebody might drop by. You never know. There's rumors about that.
Really?
Behind the scenes.
Have you heard some?
Yeah, 3 people dropping out at the same time endorsing one candidate. I heard that rumor. Anyway, which I won't say
anymore. Now you have to go to break after
I'm going
that?
That's a tease, man.
That's a tease. But I don't even think he's going to talk about it when we come back.
I'm not. Oh, man. A little bit of Eagles. Saw Don Felder at the Uline State. Man, he still can rock it. He wrote a lot of the classics. He broke up with the Eagles in 2001, but man, he can play guitar and he can still sing in the high notes too.
Oh,
there was more people at Don Felder than there were at Christopher Cross, which surprised me.
Well, we're going to talk about that later in the show, as far as your Summerfest experience, because you have some thoughts.
I do have some thoughts, very specific thoughts, but I also enjoyed myself. And again, you know, I'm a huge Summerfest fan. Going back to the days when I worked it as a janitor to all the other concerts and stuff I've seen over the last 50 years, I bought a coaster this year from the gift shop. I tried to buy something. Last year I bought a flag, which was flying in my backyard all summer.
Is that like a smiley face flag?
Yeah, the classic orange and red. No, yellow and red. Is it yellow and red? Smiley face. I love that flag, and I fly it all summer.
All right.
Yeah, so I celebrate summer. All right, I was thinking about this when you threw this on our potential topic list. We haven't talked about healthcare much lately, but it's on people's minds.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was just telling you at the break, I recently had a mole taken off at a dermatologist, and it was so fast, so easy, and I just got the bill in the mail.
But not so cheap.
But not so cheap. Because I have more moles that I would like for cosmetic reasons to get taken off, and now I'm not sure I'm going to pursue that unless it's one of those years. If I have another baby and I meet my my minimum for the year, maybe that's the year that I get all of my moles
taken
off.
That's an interesting part
of
that.
Because I saw, even with insurance, I did not get declined or denied by insurance. It was still, for one mole that was basically already falling off anyways, it was $668 to get it removed. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Well, so, as, you know, whenever we do a topic, we both kind of do our own research. So I had questions that I had spent some time this morning thinking about. So in 2024, the last full year of data, the U.S. spent $14,800 per person. People spent, I mean, in all the different ways you can spend money, a family spent $28,000 annually on healthcare.
So is that just for premiums?
Premiums and
healthcare
costs.
And then also then included if you have to actually pay for healthcare.
Yeah, or so drugs, yes.
Because that's the thing, is how many people go through an entire year where they pay their premium for their health insurance, whether it's a copay with their, totally out of pocket or in conjunction with their employer, and then don't actually have any health concerns whatsoever.
Yeah, I lucked out. I said the last 2 years, only thing I had was my physical, which was paid for.
So you just had to pay...
Yeah, my premium on my check. That was it. And thanks to
But it's still, it means that in a healthy year, you're still paying thousands of dollars.
Yes, which is the norm. The other thing is we spend way more than any other country, but we're not healthier than any other country. And it's significant, like 2 to 1. And some of the, I looked it up, the drivers of, why are we paying so much? Well, high hospital and physician prices, you testament to that. Prescription drugs, just crazy expensive, especially if you have like the ones that are.
Oh, yeah. My dad's on a new system for his diabetes.
Yeah. It's nuts. And I've talked to Eric Bilstead over the years, all of the stuff related to his type 1 diabetes. Sometimes it's just crazy how much people pay. Here's the other thing. This is uniquely American, I think, or U.S. High administrative and billing costs.
Super high.
Yeah. A lot of process.
So there is about $1 trillion per year, or nearly 20% of all healthcare spending is administrative costs.
Yeah. And, you know, God bless the people who work in those areas, but boy, you have a lot of people doing a lot of things and creating a lot of paperwork, digital or otherwise. So that one raised my eyebrow. The other one, and this is, I want to get your thoughts on this. So one of the, and I highlighted it because in the outline, because I wanted to get your thoughts. Extensive use of specialized and advanced treatments. What do you think that suggests about us versus other countries?
Well, I think it's one, we have access to them,
yes,
right?
And so, easier
and granted, and I do think there is something to be said as far as when you are facing a certain type of cancer, Alzheimer's, and that you have a potential terminal diagnosis, and your willingness to try an experimental drug, try an experimental treatment of some sort, and the fact that we do have access to them, but they're not always cheap. And so that, but yes, and then there's also the fact of how often is, because the pay incentives for doctors are not for health outcomes, but for services.
Yeah.
What advice or suggestions are you getting from your doctor, surgeon, et cetera, for what you should be doing to have the healthiest outcome possible versus they get paid more.
Yeah, and so why this matters, insurance premiums through the roof, right? Out-of-pocket costs through the roof. Government spending a lot of money, just said 2 to 1 over most countries, and then the rising concerns related to medical debt, people going bankrupt because they were sick.
Yeah.
Which, I've said this for 10 years, just is astounding to me. If anything public health care should provide is protection for people so they don't go bankrupt because they're sick. Like, that's a basic, come on, people. That's a basic human right. All right, so I guess from my looking at it, I've said this about the GLP-1 drugs. This is an opportunity for insurance companies to say to people with their pricing, we would suggest you take these drugs because ultimately you will be healthier, ultimately you'll be safer, and ultimately you'll pay less for health care. It seems like a no-brainer. But the idea of like reverse insurance, pay for people's health to stay healthy. And I know we all do wellness programs. I've done them here at work or in other jobs. But that idea is so big now. I think we have to start looking at that, not just what we can pay, but how we stay out of the doctor's office. Reduce premiums. I'm going to give a couple of specific examples before we go to break. Reducing premiums, if you have good health and you're demonstrating the practices, like not smoking, you know, drinking in a reasonable fashion, and I'll speak to that about Summerfest a little bit later. So instead of, use the car insurance example, pay people for weight loss or make them pay less, stopping smoking, exercising, you're enrolled, you can demonstrate that, I'm enrolled in a class, like a Zumba class or whatever your thing is, hot yoga, goat yoga, which is creepy, but people do it, or staying on your meds. These are all like real things that can be measured. There's data on them. I think we have to start looking at sort of incentivizing people who do the right thing.
Well, and the whole reason we're talking about this, and we'll talk about it on the other side, is the fact that there is a new poll out that shows that voters are more likely to vote for politicians who are actually bringing solutions to bring costs down when it comes to healthcare. So I'd love to hear from you. 855-616-1620 in the Citing Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. What would move the needle for you when it comes to voting for a candidate, and what suggestions do you think would actually work when it comes to lowering healthcare costs? He is Steve, I am Kristen, and this is Point Taken.
All right, here's a stat for you. 38% of Americans delayed treatment because of costs.
That didn't surprise me at all.
No. But it's not a good thing.
No, not at all. But it does not surprise me as far as the I'm fine, I'll walk it off, like the lingering issue that you're just like don't want to go get taken care of? And some of that I think sometimes is a mental block from not wanting to know what it is.
Yeah.
But I do think there's something to be said as far as like, oh, it's going to cost me how much? I'm fine. I'll figure it out.
And here's another reality, and all the olders out there will recognize. We all have friends who refuse to go to the doctor for anything.
Yeah.
And that can really lead to some serious ramifications. If you think it's just a personal decision, it can bankrupt your family.
Well, it's not. That is a whole other
kind of thing. I know.
Because I have a girlfriend who's a little bit younger than me. And we were on a trip somewhere together as a group. And I did not realize, she goes, I don't go to the doctor. I was like, what do you mean you don't go to the doctor? She has two young children. I don't go to the doctor. And I was like, well, what do you mean? And her stance is she would rather just not know and die than actually go to the doctor. It was such a wild take. And my question is, in that kind of attitude, because I think you usually see it more as we just passed Father's Day. You know, sometimes your dad is not always the best at going to the doctor. But what responsibility do you have to your friends and family to not? I see that as a really selfish move.
I do too.
Of not taking care of yourself because you're like, well, it's my life, it's my body. And I guess to a certain extent that's true. But as far as caring about the people who care about you and not wanting to live and be healthy for as long as possible because of the people you care about, if that's not a motivator, like, I don't know what else would be.
Yeah, and you could make the counter argument that by not going through expensive, you know, treatments that aren't the traditional treatments, you're saving your family all that money. I know I have people who went to Mexico for, you know, cancer treatments.
Yeah.
Essentially throwing $50,000 away is the way that I would look at it. Why this matters politically, and you mentioned before the break.
Why was the care they got not good?
No.
Oh.
No. It was bad care.
Because that's the thing. This is not as life-saving, but for people who are now doing IVF and going to, like, Norway.
Yeah.
And going to places where it's more affordable to do it there, and they feel like the care that they're getting there. And so it's more affordable to fly to a different country for IVF treatment than trying to do it here.
Why I think this conversation matters today is because this is an electability question, like affordability. Healthcare, what we do next as a country, as providers of healthcare, as individuals who have to consume that product, pay for that product, is this an electability? Like, where would you rank this on the top? It's got to be top three, right?
I would say as far as if you ask people what they care about most, certainly it'd be high up there. As far as understanding what is possible politically to make change, it is so complicated that that's why I asked the audience, as far as like, what do you want from your elected officials to be proposing? Because, you know, as much as no one's going to be surprised as far as my support for some kind of single payer.
Right. We have texters that say that.
Yeah, right. As far as like, I do not think that health insurance should be up until what? Until like the 70s? Like, health insurance for a long time wasn't a for-profit business.
Right.
And so
it was a true nonprofit.
It was a true nonprofit. And so I think taking the profit-seeking shareholder priority out of health insurance would be a good thing, because think about how much any of these health insurance companies just spend on marketing.
Yeah. And
right?
And lobbyists
and stuff. And so taking that piece out of it, I think price transparency across the board, because it changes tenfold the same procedure depending on how much insurance is covering it, what the negotiated deal is with that hospital or clinic or whatever. And so knowing what something actually costs and having standard capped prices on those things, I think, would make a big difference. And so I think, what are you looking for elected officials to be saying what their platform is that would convince you that by voting for them, something could actually change?
One of the things, I know we got to break here, but one of the things that people often talk about is direct consumer drug sales. You can shop around.
That's like what Mark Cuban's doing, right?
Yes, right, exactly. And he's actually leading the way on that, which I give him a lot of respect, mad respect for. So what do you think? Got a lot of texts on at 855-616-1620. We'll come back with that conversation after this. Kristen and Steve, 620 WTMJ. This text from the 414, just flipped screens. Let me put it back. It sums it up perfectly. Just had open heart. This is from the 414. Just had open heart surgery last week. I'm sure the bills will give me a stroke. Wow. Yeah, that can't be cheap. That cannot be cheap. A lot of people are talking about the single payer system.
Sending good healing vibes to that person.
Yeah, feel better as soon as possible. That is amazing. A friend of mine, Tom, had a heart transplant, and he's still dealing with the ramifications of that. God bless those people that are in those situations. A lot of people talk about single payer. We have to. Whatever
I feel
your
like
thoughts
you're not
are,
a fan of single payer.
Not in some of the ways that I'm not a fan of where everything just gets paid for because people are bad consumers.
Have you looked? Is there a different country's model that you've looked?
No,
to
I haven't looked at it
like,
that way. I hear the stories. We all hear the stories about they have that, but then it takes forever. I don't know if that's true. Those seem anecdotal to me. I do have relatives in the UK. They say it's a reasonable amount of time for surgeries that are not life threatening.
Yeah.
So I trust them. They're my cousins. They're my aunts and uncles. Whatever. A lot of people talking about obviously the cost of insurance premiums. One of the texters says their premiums doubled this year, which we talked about earlier in the year.
Yeah, the ACA subsidies.
And your stance is we should bring the extended.
No, well, that is a Band-Aid.
Yes,
I think the whole debate that happened at the end of the year last year, as far as the extending the ACA subsidies, was in the short term, it's going to raise a lot of people's costs. And that's bad, but it always was a Band-Aid for the underlying root causes of why our healthcare is so expensive. And so, sure, like we can extend them, but I think there needs to be a deeper, bigger conversation with a lot of political courage around how we actually change the system.
Yeah, streamline the system. There's way too much duplication, redundancy, and just way too many people. The other one, I'll hurt some feelings, but if you're a nonprofit medical organization and you're paying your CEO like $15 to $20 million a year, come on. And I've actually done a lot of research on nonprofit providers. That's not the way the system
Here's
should
my
work.
Question.
Not at all.
Whether it's a CEO of a hospital or a CEO of a company, what is that person doing to provide $15 million worth of value to the organization?
If they're bringing in
like
billions of revenue,
who is
sure.
ever that good at their job where it's worth that much paying them that much money?
Only if they're bringing in billions of revenue, which is not happening in the healthcare system.
No.
At least not in the dollars and cents traditional budget viewpoint. All right. Dave Spano, the CEO of Annex Wealth Management.
It's been a while since he's been here.
Well, he talked to me last week. Weren't you off last week?
Yeah.
You may keep missing him. But help me, he's back.
All right,
news is next. 620 WTMJ.
The work week is here. Let's begin with your Monday market preview with Annex Wealth Management CEO Dave Spano on Point Taken.
Dave Spano, it's been a minute since you and I saw each other. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How you been?
Good.
I'm good.
Hi, Steve.
Well,
how are
you? No one cares about
I
you,
don't
Steve.
Forget about you, Steve.
I got it.
All right. Let's jump right in. Plenty to talk about. So up and down with Iran as far as teetering on a 60-day peace deal. How has the market reacted as far between last week and today?
Well, as you know, it's moving pretty quickly. You know, they walked away from the talks, and then overnight, it looks like they've made some progress. You know, a big part of that is this MOU, this memorandum of understanding, and what is in it. And you know, it's certainly getting people's attention. The fact that they could start selling oil before this nuclear agreement gets any teeth in it at all. So both sides of the aisle were a little bit surprised at that, but maybe the president is negotiating. We'll have to see what happens. But there's certainly what you're starting to see, and the most important thing, I think, for consumers is that oil prices are now under where they were when the Iran conflict began. And so you saw them spike, you know, up into the way over $100 a barrel. So here we are back to around $80. And that's pretty good, and you're going to start seeing that at the gas pumps.
I want to give you a chance to talk about Alan Greenspan, passed away at the age of 100, American economist, served four presidents, former chair of the Federal Reserve, and we'll get to the current chair in a little bit. But I know you have thoughts about his career. Serving the American public and you know, working in that important piece of our country's history.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, first of all, lived to a prime age of 100 years old, right? Shintani, Steve, that's how we say it in Italian, right?
Right.
100 years of life. And it's unbelievable. You know, he, by the way, Kristen, I know that you know that he was married to Andrea Mitchell for many years. And so he was a very famous and great Fed president. As you said, he was, you didn't really know what side of the aisle he was on, which made him a great Fed president. But he went through many presidents. You know, he famously had a couple of things that, you know, you and I have talked about over the years. One is his term irrational exuberance. And what he was trying to do was jawbone. In other words, that's a Fed tactic, just to talk the markets in or out of a particular policy. And so he obviously did not do that as we went into a crisis back, you know, in the late 1990s. And that's when he said it, in like 95, 96, somewhere in there, that the market is going through this irrational exuberance. But he was this libertarian, if you will, of financial theory. And he thought that it would self-correct. Now, it did. It's not probably the way we wanted it to have that much of a correction back in the Y2K burst. But that's what he did. And you know, think about some of the other things that he did. You know, the briefcase indicator. And as you pointed out, how does that relate to Kevin Warsh? So, folks, many years ago, he used to go into these meetings with a briefcase, a brown briefcase, and it would overflow with papers. Generally means that he was going to make a move. And if the briefcase was not overflowing with papers, then that means he wasn't going to make a move. And that was the indication. And so what he started to do is just be more forward and more thoughtful and more transparent on what the Federal Reserve was going to do. And they did that. They did that for a long time. Now, in contrast, that is 180 degrees of what Kevin Warsh wants to do. He does not want it to be so transparent. And he wants that to have the policy set up front and understand that we can look forward and look backwards. So right now the Fed looks at backwards. They look in the rearview mirror. What are the facts and circumstances? Can we look backwards? The new Fed chair wants to say what is coming down the road, and I actually do like that. We'll see if he can get away with a lot of things he wants to.
So what are the other things that you take away from, yeah, obviously the Fed signals the rates might actually rise, which is obviously the opposite of what President Trump wants. But what were other takeaways from his Warsh's debut meeting?
Yeah, I think, you know, for sure, you know, there's 18 voting members. 9 of them were not in agreement, which is pretty unusual about the dot plots going forward. They were all in agreement to leave them alone. Right now. So that is a good thing. But one of the shorthand is, and what I took away from it in the statement that he made, is the committee will deliver price stability. What does that mean? You know, the Fed has two jobs, as we've talked about before, and it's price stability. That means inflation and employment. And right now, the employment job, that is checked. When you have unemployment at 4% or under, the Fed doesn't need to do much to push unemployment or try to get more employment. And that is helped, Kristen, by what is happening with the AI drive. There is a ton of productivity. There's a ton of spending. The GDP report could be significant this next quarter because of that. And so the Federal Reserve said, well, that's the reason why we want to raise rates. But if you can have productivity and have it not be inflationary, that is the best of both worlds. And so that is probably why they're just going to sit on their hands until later in the year. So is he going to deliver price stability? Yes. I don't think there's any doubt about that, Steve.
Dave Spano, CEO of Annex Wealth Management. Stick around during the break. After the break, we're almost halfway through the year. We'll get Dave's assessment on market and economic performance in the country and the world. After this on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry, along with Steve Scafidi, and we are talking to Dave Spano, CEO of Annex Wealth Management, as we usually do on Mondays. And happy summer solstice. I don't know if you celebrate, Dave, but I have a celebration tonight with some girlfriends.
Nice.
And
what does that celebration look like?
it's a little witchy, if you might. It's a little like celebrating the like flower crowns and pictures, and we're having a fire on the beach. And
nice.
Yeah.
Hats and broomsticks, witchy?
I don't think we're going to have hats and broomsticks, but it's, right. You know.
That sounds like fun.
I think you should record it so we can all
see. I don't think either of you are surprised that I would partake in something.
Not at all, actually. No, not at all.
Not one bit.
Nope. And so, all right. But summer solstice also means that we are basically halfway through the year, which is wild as far as how fast this year has gone. So I guess when you look at the economy performance and the market performance of 1H2026, Dave. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, the market has really done well, right? So you look at what the S&P 500 has done so far through the first almost 6 months. We're up 10% on the S&P. Small caps are up way more than that. The triple Qs, which is a ticker symbol for the NASDAQ, is doing great. And that is obviously because a lot of the tech stocks have been participating. And just all of this AI talk and data center build out and all of the picks and shovels that go with that. So and remember, this has happened amidst the backdrop of a Federal Reserve chair changing course, of Iran, of the midterm elections coming up. So it just proves a conversation that I had over the weekend that sometimes it matters less who's at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And the reason why I say that, because this economy, this U.S. economy, is so resilient and it is growing that this economy is made up by everybody who gets up and goes to work and is productive and goes into the economy. So that is really a good thing. So even as crazy as a war in Iran and shutting down the Straits of Hormuz and a change in the Federal Reserve, all of that has yet to upend the economy that is the U.S., and it's just fantastic.
All right, so on Wednesday, the Federal Reserve does their what they call a yearly bank stress test. What do you think this will show? 32 large banks across the country. What will it show, Dave?
Yeah, and it's the 32, and that's a really important point, because what happened, you guys remember when there was the financial crisis after 08, there were two senators, one named Dodd and one named Frank. And you remember Barney Frank, he was pretty famous. And so they wrote the Dodd-Frank. And in Dodd-Frank, there was a lot of this, they let the financial institutions get too far away from where they were supposed to do. And so they really tightened the stress test. And so they were stress testing small banks and community banks. And really, that wasn't the intent. The intent, and even Barney Frank said that later on in life, the intent is of the, you pointed out, these 32 banks. And so you're going to see there is going to be a lot of health in the financial institutions. It is certainly not the way it was in 08 and 07, 08 and 09 when we had these cascading failures of financial institutions. And I've told you this before, Steve. September 15th, 2008, I'll never forget it. I remember before the market opened, the money markets had broke the buck. In other words, it was trading less than a dollar. And but for the actions of the Federal Reserve to backstop that, that crisis would have been even worse than what it was. And so that's what Dodd-Frank said, and that's what the stress test of the banks was about. You're going to see that the stress test is going to show some healthy banks that are in the system today.
Dave Spano, don't forget this Wednesday, and here I am looking it up right now, Wednesday, June 24th, 6 p.m. to 7:30, reserve your spot at annexwealth.com. Click the events tab, Single in Retirement Financial Planning Strategies. Dave, why is that so important?
Well, there's so many people that go through changes and just haven't gone, especially if you've gone through a divorce or you've lost a spouse, and it's just sometimes new. We help people through that, and I think it's important for people to understand where they are and that there is hope and that there is an opportunity going forward.
Yeah, great resource. And don't forget about the Instant Insights that you guys do. They're fantastic. You got one coming up on July 2nd, Jobs Report, Economic Outlook. All available, easy to find, annexwealth.com. Click the Events tab. Thanks as always, Dave. Appreciate it. Have a great rest of your week.
Yeah, you too. It's a beautiful day. Thanks.
Happy summer solstice.
You got it. Have fun at the witching party. Yes.
The Wicked Witch of the Milwaukee area.
Huh? Milwaukee, yeah. Sure. We'll go with that.
Thank you, Dave Spahn. All right, we'll take a quick break. Lots more to get to. We've got some fun topics coming up in the next half hour. Not that this wasn't fun, because Dave is always fun. We'll take a break here on 620 WTMJ.
Must be the season.
Hippie Kristen.
Yeah. I mean, this is hilarious. When I was, God, I don't even know what it was called. This was 20-ish years ago. So I was in community college in Santa Monica, and I had a women's studies teacher and a close group of girlfriends. We went to some kind of women's retreat of the waning moon or something that is similar to this up in Big Sur. And
beautiful.
I remember holding a snake, because a snake is a representative of the feminine or something like that. So I've done some weird stuff in my time.
I can see you as a hippie. Yeah, absolutely.
I've said some weird, we'll say, pagan adjacent things that are supposed to be in tune with nature.
Well, I was telling you, I watched the live webcam from Stonehenge because they have a big gathering. It's the one time you can actually go up to the monument. People are like, thousands of people, you know, witness the summer solstice. I get it.
I do think there's something. I would say, I'm not, I say pagan tug in cheek, but I do think that there is something to be said as far as there's a reason why a lot of us feel better when you are actually in nature, right? There is something as far as like it feeling holistic, it feeling like there was something that was meant to be humans as far as like the circle of life and all that stuff. And I don't like, I'm not like a huge subscriber to it, but I know how I feel when I'm in it. And I'm like, I get why people are really into this.
Before there was organized religion, there was this.
Yes, exactly. And there's a reason why most organized religion, had certain assimilations of like why we have certain holidays around certain things that were already pagan holidays and pagan iconography and things that were making it easier for people who believed in many gods to start believing in one god. Mm-hmm. Like
the origin story of many of our current religions. All right. We are asking you a question we did on Sunday on our newsletter, but I want you to continue to go to our newsletter and sign up first foremost. But we're asking the screen time question. And we actually put ourselves out there.
We did put ourselves out there.
Yeah.
And so we, if you were a subscriber to the newsletter, Extra Points, you saw that we both put a screenshot of our
screen time from last week.
Screen time from last week. And I said, can you guess whose is whose?
Yeah.
And because what was yours? Just a little over 2 hours per day on average. And mine was a little over five, which is actually lower than it's been.
I actually was impressed by that,
and
given what you do.
Given what I do, and that is also including times where I've had to, like, sit on my phone and, like, edit videos and stuff, so I'm not just scrolling the whole time. But in this week's newsletter, we showed, like, little YouTube videos. If you don't know how to check your screen time, how to go check it, and then asked you a couple different questions as far as what was your total time last week, what was your average time per day, and then what was your top app? Because what was your top app? Threads. Mine was Instagram, and then a close second was this stupid game I play on my phone.
Yeah,
it's
this
stupid
that.
Game that I play in order to stop myself from scrolling, and I should probably just do neither.
So I was surprised by your six. I thought it'd be double digits, but you said you've worked on it, which I appreciate. Mine used to be double digits. It went from that to like six-ish, and now I've consciously made an effort to get it under three, and my next goal is under two. I get that we all have work to do, but there's proper ways to like put the phone down after you've done what you need to do. But I want to know what generally the consensus is. So I want hundreds of people to respond and tell me. Now I will tell you this:
because we have less people, there was definitely a fall off.
Yes.
Usually when we have our survey and our newsletter, people take it. It's most people who read it, I think, take it. And this week there was, because we asked you also to do another step as far as tell on yourself.
Yes.
Less people who took it this time.
But I realize, having had some side conversations away from the show, people get really defensive about this. Like, why would you ask that? What do you care what I do? Because I think there's...
Well, it's anonymous. We don't know. You can't link this back
to
the
But beyond that, I think there are certain, not health risks, but there are addictive qualities to social media, especially just scrolling endlessly, and the time passes also, it's 3 hours later and you've done nothing in 3 hours other than doom scroll. There is some truth to that there's risk there for people. And if you're talking about young people especially, there are certain things it does to the brain, how they process information. And I get there's the Miss Rachels that do really positive things on the internet. I get all of that, and my youngest grandson is a beneficiary of that. He already can count to 10, and he's like a year and a half. It's amazing. But there are risks to this stuff. So it's a serious question about a fun place to spend time. I guess that's the way I would describe it.
All right. So if you are willing to have some self-awareness, check on yourself, how much screen time you have, and you want to fill out the survey, just text survey to 855-616-1620. We will send you the link to directly fill out the survey, and then we will publish the results in our newsletter upcoming this Sunday. And if you have not subscribed to that yet, you should text EXTRA to 855-616-1620, and we will send you the link to sign up. Anything else I'm missing right now, Steve?
No.
Okay.
Well, I have some Summerfest thoughts. Specific thought, exactly. I love Summerfest. You know,
positive or negative?
Negative towards certain individuals. Oh, I heard that live on Saturday night. It was. Look.
Are you still recovering from your late night?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
The funny thing is, I didn't get home till 11:30. Didn't get to bed till 12:30. Still woke up at 5.
That's what I mean. Sometimes I feel like, you know, when your body's not used to staying out past your bedtime, it takes a couple days to bounce back.
So I love Summerfest. And I you know, Trapper Shep, local artist, love this guy. I've seen him like three or four times. He did a On Wisconsin, version of On Wisconsin, which is just tremendous. Had the crowd going. He's so enthusiastic. Brilliant singer and guitarist. He was fun. Then a little pause. Don Felder, original member of the Eagles, you know, ripped off some Eagles hits, that many of which he wrote. Fantastic talents. And then Christopher Cross. Admittedly a yacht rock guy. I didn't know this, but he played in the Ringo Starr's band for many years. So he's got the music chops. Brilliant guitarist as well. His voice is not what it was, you know, when he had his, you know, mega album with four number one hits on it. But what irritated me was, so I'm sitting in the bench, the bench seats, you know, because
at the U-line, right?
Yeah, at the U-line, most northern stage, I believe, at Summerfest. And these two dudes my age were drunk, first and foremost, would not stop talking or shouting throughout the whole concert. It's like, why don't you let someone who wants to, like, listen to the music sit in your seats? Because there's plenty of people on the side.
What are they talking about?
Nonsense. Just yelling stuff. If they'd hear a lyric and they'd, like, respond to it, it's like, shut the hell up. And here's the other thing. Their wives were not yelling, but they're sitting with their backs to the stage looking at their husbands, saying nothing. Maybe some intervention would be a good idea. I get Summerfest is about
beer. Mean like the wives scolding their husbands, telling them to keep it down?
Yeah, shut the hell up. What are you doing? I mean, Christopher Cross has some quiet songs.
That's true. Why didn't you say anything?
Yeah, I'm going to get an altercation.
You can
radio
do it
host
nicely.
Involved in Summerfest
altercation. You can do it nice. You can be like, hey, guys, can you just keep it down?
I thought I was sort of doing that with my looks. Especially to their spouses who are...
Are you confrontational in person?
No.
I feel like for someone who has so many opinions and thoughts about how other people's behaviors, you also don't really do much to, like, correct other people's behaviors.
Yeah, because I don't think that's my job.
Oh. You just want to... It's your job to come talk about it on air.
Maybe in an era where people didn't shoot each other over nonsense, I would have been more aggressive. But not in the current climate, no. No. I don't get it. If you're going to watch a show, watch a show. Because there's plenty of people that would have sat in those great seats.
Like,
right in the middle.
If you're going to be, like, sit in the back, it's kind of your point. You're like, you can be here for the atmosphere, but if you don't get, like, a front row bench seat.
Yeah.
If you're not going to be sitting there, actually. But, like, whose job is it to enforce that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not busting the bartenders. I was a bartender. The interaction they have is, like, 10 seconds long. Give me two Millers. They're not going to be able to assess one's condition.
Oh, because, so is your bigger problem that they were talking or that they were drunk?
Talking.
Because even if they were sober, that's the talking that bothers
you,
right?
They were, you know, I watched the maturation of the drunk process because they were there for the Felder concert too, which was Felder went on at what 7:30 and Christopher Cross was 9:30, so they went through the, you know, 2 16-ounce Miller High Life Talls every hour is pretty solid consumption, wouldn't you think? I mean, that's six. How many ounces is that in 3 hours? That's a lot of beer. Yeah. So they were loud before they were drunk. What are you doing? Yeah. What's your Summerfest experience been like so far?
Great. I've only gotten to go Thursday so far. I think I'm going to go this Thursday because I'm going to Rapids this weekend and then spend a fair amount of time there the 4th of July weekend since we'll be in town and soak up as much as I can.
Yeah, and to Sarah Pancari and all the great team there. The grounds look great. There's a really cool art exhibit. You see that art exhibit on the north side as well? It's like these glass things. It looks like a coral reef. Check it out. You can see it from the freeway. It's so big.
You know what I was really impressed with this year is that, and I don't know if this is directly correlated with the new CEO, but Harley, for the first time I've ever noticed it, they have their booth set up this time for you to actually be able to get on a Harley.
Yeah, I saw that.
And
so,
I mean, you don't move on it, but you can because it's on a stand, and then you can rev the engine and feel what it's like to actually get on a bike. Which Mike and I walk by that, he goes, why have they not been doing that every single year? As far as just
new
the
leadership
opportunity
at Harvey, so.
To sit on a bike, see what it feels like. And so I thought that was a very good sign as far as, like you said, new leadership and new ways to be involved in the community.
Everything from parking to, you know, the grounds themselves, the cleanliness of the grounds. The bathrooms are always amazing, given the traffic of these things. Food choices, awesome. Had a couple different places, a little Mexican.
Oh, yeah, what's your go-to food?
We don't have that anymore because we're both sort of in a, you know, weight loss mode. So we didn't eat, like, in the old day, we had, you know, probably a sampler platter at Goolsby's and all that stuff and all the fried
Sazzes.
Food. Sazzes, rather, right. Exactly right, yes. And we had some pizza, a little bit of, I had like a half a piece of pizza.
I do feel like there's an opportunity there because you think about State Fair and you think about how many people go to State Fair to try the food. I don't know if anyone goes to Summerfest to try like new food.
I don't think
items.
So.
It's just, and I think that could be an opportunity as they think about new innovative things as far as what are food contests or what are new things that even if you're not there for a specific artist, you want to come and try XYZ thing because it is the new, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
Forky, whatever they call it, they would call it instead of what State Fair calls it.
I think they've shown the willingness under new leadership, Sarah, to be innovative. And I think they're doing some amazing things. And Gavi, those from when I worked there in college to what it looks, it's just amazing, the transformation.
Did the youths behave themselves?
It's a different environment after like 10:30, 11, completely.
A lot of teenagers.
Does that
bother you?
No, absolutely not. Because that I was a teenager once.
They're making core memories.
Those are future adults going to Summerfest.
Yeah.
No one like was banging into us or anything, but it was crowded. And you know what? All of those teenagers, they want to have fun. We always say they need a place to go. Well, they're choosing to go to Summerfest.
That's how I feel, too. I feel like people who complain about teenagers being at Summerfest are just crotchety.
And I will also applaud the police department and all the public safety folks because they were in force doing their jobs. So hopefully people gave them a shout out for that.
Do you want to get in?
We may go one more time during the day because we're typically day goers, but obviously we went to see Chris Cross and Don Felder, so... Thanks to all the folks at Summerfest. Great job. All right, after the break, you went to a movie this weekend.
I did.
You'll tell us that story and more after this.
All right, I'm saying it now. I don't think there's another movie series that exists where there's five movies that is better than Toy Story.
Not Fast and Furious?
Not Fast and Furious. Not Rocky. Not what else has five movies in it? I mean, I guess you could stretch and say,
oh, the Nightmare on Elm Street.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Knights of the Caribbean.
Pirates of the Caribbean has more than five or has five?
It's close.
I think it's five.
Yeah, it's four or five.
Okay, definitely not. I would love for people to challenge me on this, but I went and saw Toy Story 5 yesterday. That was Mike's wish because Frankie loves Toy Story.
Biggest opening ever for a Toy Story movie.
And he was like, so it was our first time taking her to a theater.
How'd that go?
It was great. She was great.
Awesome.
We went to Ridge. Mark, shout out to Marcus. And they have those dream lounger chairs. I may or may not have fallen asleep.
Those things are awesome.
They're very comfortable. And she, you know, she talked a little bit as far as like she was excited about having popcorn. But even the yelling as characters came on the screen, she didn't really yell at the screen. And she was great. She made it through the entire thing. We did put a diaper on her, and so she wouldn't have to like pee her pants and we wouldn't have to leave in the middle. But she did great. And I laughed out loud. I cried a little bit. Mike cried a little bit.
Really?
And, well, that gets like a
what were the moments
well
that made
up.
You cry?
You know what? It's interesting. I want to do this without many spoilers, but you know, the big thing for this one is tech in the giving your child a tablet of some sort,
screen time,
and the power of play, which is different than like you can't. A big thing of it is like playing is different than engaging with a device.
Is tech the villain in this thing?
It's at first, yes, and then there's like a happy ending with all of it. But as far as like being able to coexist in both analog and a digital world. But there's also an element of it of kids being mean. I don't know. Yeah, kind of mean, right? As far as like young, like because now the new character, not Andy, but now Bonnie has the toys and she's getting older and she's trying to make friends. And I think as a parent, you are like, oh God, especially a parent of a little kid, and just what that is as far as your kid getting older and wanting them to be able to make friends and be social and not be ostracized. So there's, you know, if you think about it, it's 40 years since that first one came out. That movie is like not, no, because it's not 40 years, 30 years.
That'd be 30 years.
30 years, right? Because, yeah, because I read this. So it's 30 years because I was like, that's not as old as me. Because you think about the fact that Tom Hanks and Tim Allen are still doing the voices of Buzz and Woody.
1995, so yeah.
Yeah, so, and that they were 39 and 43, respectively, when they first did the movie, and they're now doing it at 69 and 73. I'm pretty sure this is the last one, but Can you think of a better series?
No, I can't.
That has done both financially how well it's done, incredible. But I would say even all of the movies. The fourth one was like a little weird. I would say the worst one of the five is number four. But two,
one and two are awesome.
Three was great. Three, when they go to the daycare, was great. This one's really good. I feel like the way that they transitioned it from Andy to a new kid and how these, I think they're all really good. And I just.
With two boomers who don't have kids at home and have four grandkids from 1.5 to 10, appreciate a movie like this in the theater? You think? Would we cry?
I think you can. I think so. I think anyone who has. This is why I think these movies are so powerful. Because I think as a kid, it's the magic of these toys coming to life. But the themes of the movies, and each of the themes are a little different depending on the movie. But I think it has so much intrinsically involved in raising kids, growing up, the power of play, relationships, and it reminds you of your childhood. It reminds you of your children that I don't necessarily know if you have to. I would say I'm only going to so many movies this summer in the theater, go see Odyssey in the theater.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to
see. I think this is one you can wait until you can stream it at home, that it's not that much better on the big screen, but I would say see it. I think you would enjoy it, but you don't need to see it in the theater.
You don't think I'm a kid at heart?
No.
That's a very telling
people
answer.
Who are more of a kid at heart.
Yes, that's true.
Than you.
Yeah.
I don't see you like getting down and like playing. Do you play with toys with your grandchildren?
Yes, of course.
You play make believe?
No.
What do you mean?
We play hide and seek.
Okay.
All the time.
What's your best hiding place?
Generally, the garage.
Have you ever hidden somewhere so well that they couldn't find you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. My grandkids are very obvious where they hide. Curtains.
Not great.
But they have their feet, their shoes sticking out, that whole thing. And they're hiding, but they're still talking. They haven't made that connection yet.
Yeah.
I love the fact that we're talking about hide and seek. A very fun game, by the way. Adults should play that, just with adults.
What tag? How you doing on tag these days?
God, I played a lot of tag when I was a kid, man.
That was not the neighborhood. Question.
These days,
you didn't tag much these days.
No,
that's your fake out.
Mine is not bad. My friends, I can't
juke anybody these days.
No, I'm not juking anybody, but I can still get around my friends, not so much. All right, we'll wrap up today's show, which has been brilliant, by the way. Thanks for hanging out with us. She's Chris, and I'm Steve. Point taken. Texter has an interesting thought: thinner, more limber, agile. Steve needs to try Twister again. Remember that game?
I do remember Twister.
That was wild. I remember playing.
It's a fun date night for you and Kathy.
I hope she's listening to that. She's also very limber, if I might say.
You both are looking great.
Yeah.
You both are looking as good as I've ever seen you in the, how long have I known both of you? 6 years?
Yeah.
Going on 6 years?
We're both, she's closer than I am. She's at her, entering college weight, and I'm about 12 or 13 pounds away. So,
impressive.
We're getting there. Want to give a shout out to Matt, listener Matt, who said hi to me at Summerfest.
Yeah.
We're walking in. I told you about the game that Kathy and I play. Whoever knows you get $5 if it's you or the other person. And he said, hey, big fan. He's at our
trivia night, I think.
At Revere's.
It was the first time we met him.
Yeah,
in person.
And he was actually going to Christopher Cross. I'd be curious, Matt, if you enjoyed the concert like I did. I love the fact that listeners, no one took me up on the free beers, though.
Oh, okay.
So as I often say, we'll do it at State Fair again in July and August. Is it July and August this year?
Less than 2 months away from State Fair. That's crazy.
Yeah. We actually have a remote next week, right?
We have the WTMJ golf event.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's next week. We have a Salvation Army thing.
Mm-hmm, coming
out. When that's going to be as far as doing a remote.
Yeah.
We should do more remotes.
We should. And we are
out
in August.
I'm jealous that we didn't get to do Summerfest like the other shows did.
Yeah.
No one would be there.
In August, we're doing a Wolski's event. I have to contact.
Oh, is that what we picked?
Yeah, I'm gonna contact them. And it's just a meet and greet. So I'm drinking. I'm Ubering there. So whatever.
Because it's your bachelor week, right?
I'm a batch that week. So
I don't. You're the only person I know who ever shortens bachelor to batch.
Batch. Really?
Yes.
Oh,
I don't think that's not a thing.
I made it a thing. I'm a creator. I'm a content creator, whether you admit it or not.
Are we getting on the scooters and going up the Chachi shop this week? Are we doing it this week?
I don't know. We'll see. I didn't say I'd ride the scooter.
You did.
Did I say that?
Jazz, pull the tape from last Friday. Right.
We'll talk about it tomorrow.
We'd get Steve on a scooter.
I'm not riding that scooter.
Yes,
Chachi shop, yes. All right. We'll be back tomorrow, yes?
Yes.
Point taken.